Let me cut to the chase and tell you how this sermon ends. Everett Worthington Jr. forgave the young boys who murdered his mother. He never let go of the memories of the love that he had for her or the tenderness that she taught him. Instead, he let go of his rage and his distrust. He found peace without needing to close his heart or creating a barricade of protection around his life. He no longer was kept awake by questions of why or what if or by the images of that evening. Everett Worthington Jr., despite having to face the unimaginable pain and loss of such a horrible crime, turned out just fine. I can't tell you how Everett Worthington Jr. did it exactly, how he managed to get through his trauma without becoming bitter or resentful. If you'd like to know the details of that, you can read the book that he wrote describing what went on for him that night and the days and the weeks and the years that followed. But this sermon isn't about Everett Worthington Jr. and how he got past his hurts. It's about us and how we get past ours. We could certainly look at Everett Worthington Jr.'s life and say that he had exceptional character, which allowed him the virtues that were required to prevail. Or we could actually even point to the years of training that he had as a psychologist, or even the years of study of reconciliation counseling that he had as a couples therapist. And of course, one could even point to the dozen or so articles and books that he had written on forgiveness before that fateful night. But knowing this, it might be tempting to conclude that his ability to heal and forgive is beyond our capacity. After all, we don't have his training or experience. But it might also help to know that Dr. Everett Worthington Jr. struggled mightily with forgiveness in the days that followed. He questioned every single study he had ever read, every anecdote he had ever heard, every bit of wisdom he came across, even everything he himself previously wrote came into question and was hard to read and hard to believe. And when it came down to his own time of testing, nothing was easy and nothing was automatic. He had the same dark night of the soul that awaits all of us who walk toward the task of forgiveness. But perhaps it was character that allowed Dr. Worthington to forgive and to find peace. In his book, he mentions the same thing that Nina talked about this morning, that he could just pretend to forgive while still harboring a secret hate underneath. After all, no one would actually see any of the inner turmoil or the way that he clenched his teeth or the way he turned in his sleep at night. And no one would know if his thoughts were full of malice as long as he said all the right things. They would only read what was written in his books and not read what was written on his heart. Perhaps it was the character that led him to peace. After all, in his book he said, "Character is forged from what we do when no one is looking." Dr. Worthington is not alone in having character, nor is he alone in needing and deserving peace. That is something that we all share with him. All of us have been hurt, and all of us have, at some time or another, been slighted, felt disrespected, had our heart broken or our dreams stepped on, came across broken agreements or expectations, or came to doubt the love that we felt was promised. Sometimes we were hurt by someone who was just careless and not even aware that they were hurting us. Sometimes we were hurt by someone we didn't even know. More often, though, hurt comes from someone we do know and we have history with, and it's the broken trust that makes it harder. Sometimes we feel that there was an obvious intent to hurt, which compounds the trauma with betrayal. Everyone who lives long enough experiences these things, No one is exempt. There are no exceptions. Most often in society, especially this rugged individualist society, we're told to get over it. Stuff it down. Slough it off. Ignore it. But it becomes harder to harbor these feelings of resentment and continue to take the risks that make our life exciting. To be open and vulnerable again, to take a chance with love under the same circumstance, sometimes even with the same people that once hurt us. There is a great poem that I turn to when I think about the challenges that are before us when we really fully understand the risk that we take when we engage in love. It's a poem by English poet David White, and it's called Self-Portrait. He writes this: "It doesn't interest me if there is one God or many gods. I want to know if you belong or you feel abandoned. If you know despair or can see it in others. I want to know if you are prepared to live in this world with its harsh need to change you. If you can look back with firm eyes saying, this is where I stand. I want to know if you know how to melt into that fierce heat of living, falling toward the center of your own longing. I want to know if you are willing to live day by day with the consequence of love and the bitter, unwanted passion of your sure defeat. I have been told in that fierce embrace, even the gods speak of God. I have been told in that fierce embrace, even the gods speak of God." I suspect, like Everett Worthington Jr., we all spend a little time holding on to that imaginary baseball bat, imagining what we would do with the hurt and rage we feel. In our minds, we want to beat down or beat back against what has hurt us. And it's hard to let go of that impulse. And even if we don't retaliate, it's hard not to harbor some sort of grudge. We don't recognize that the one who is most often hurt in those situations most is ourselves. There is a great skit by Jack Handy of Saturday Night Live. Does anybody remember Jack Handy and his famous aphorisms? He had one that was fantastic that said, "We imagine the person who hurt us, and as we do, we light a stick of dynamite. And then we call them on the phone, and we hold the burning fuse to the receiver, and we say, hear that? That's dynamite, baby." Holding on to anger too long is like giving ourselves the gift of an exploding cigar. It's like drinking rat poison and waiting for the rat to die. Composer William Walton once said, "Refusing to let go of our unresolved hurts is like getting stung to death by the same bee." The great irony is described by philanthropist Dale Carnegie, who says this: "When we continue to resent our enemies, we are giving them power over us, power over our sleep, power over our appetites, our blood pressure, our health, and our happiness. Our enemies would dance with joy if only they knew how they were worrying us, how what they had done continued to lacerate us. Our resentment is not hurting them at all, but it is turning our days and nights into a hellish turmoil." And the vast majority of the time, the people who hurt us have no interest in being our enemies. The price we pay for holding on to this hurt and resentment is threefold. The first price we pay is time. I don't know what number I would come up with if I counted all the hours that I have ever spent stewing on conversations that I had years and years ago, and confrontations where I felt hurt or disrespected, and replayed them in my mind years afterwards, rehearsing the comebacks that I would so cleverly say. I wish I had that time back. The second price we pay is baggage. For each incident, we carry a little bit of baggage with us. Every unresolved hurt is like receiving a package that we don't want to open, and yet we can't find a way to give back. It sits in our consciousness for a while, but then we move it back into our storage of our unconsciousness. And although we don't trip over it in our living room, it still keeps us from getting anything new in our life. We fail to notice how much room it takes up in our attention, in our energy, or how much we are paying for storage costs. And the third thing it costs us is connections, because we don't often trace back the reasons that we tell ourselves that we have no room or we can't afford the love or the trust or the intimacy or the tenderness that we keep saying that we really want in our lives. Like many of us, there was a time in my life where I wondered why I didn't have more close relationships or why I didn't have that special relationship that I had been yearning for. There was no room with all the stuff I was carrying. Even after I was really able to be honest with myself about all the baggage that I carried in my psychic storeroom, it took me years to get that baggage down to a carry-on level. So how does that happen? Let me say a little bit about what I have learned about forgiveness, knowing that I am no expert. But I have to start with this cardinal rule. Don't confuse forgiveness with permission to let abuse continue. Allowing people to continue to abuse us is a failure of boundaries. It's a sign of codependence. And it's often a sign of the love and the disrespect that you are, the love and the respect that you are not giving yourself. Forgiveness is simply letting go of the anger and hurt once there is a reliable understanding that the hurt will not continue. It is not an abdication of your own worthiness or need for safety. And forgiveness is not easy. It can't be done all at once or right away. It takes practice and it takes little steps, one after another. C.S. Lewis said once, "If you want to learn about forgiveness, it's usually better to start with something easier than the Gestapo." It's natural to feel angry. Don't deny the impulse to be or feel anger. But don't get stuck there. Remember all that baggage in our psychic storeroom? Anger is what actually just points us to take a look back there. And what anger is doing is prompting us to do what we have needed to do for so long, which is to unpack all of the feelings in that baggage, to unpack the hurt and the sadness and the fear and the doubt and the old wounds that are underneath that anger. We need to pick up each one of these feelings. We need to hold it against our heart, against our bones. We need to notice how it physically resides in our body. And we need to love ourselves through that process, or better yet, find someone who is willing to help love you through that process. It's difficult work to do alone. And remember, unpacking old hurts demands a willingness to be able to grieve. Many times the hurts that we've incurred were from people disengaging with us. So we compound that hurt when we disengage with ourselves and our feelings, when we constantly avoid that task of unpacking by turning to distractions like work or email or TV or other addictions. Finally, understand this kind of pain is often physiological as well as psychological. Scientists are now learning that we can store trauma and stress and even grief in our cellular tissue. And so every time we are triggered to be reminded of the incident that hurt us, it will show up in our body. We will tense in certain ways. And that's because our hurts are trying to call attention to what needs to be healed. It's essential to give it attention and love and understanding and acceptance. Yesterday was Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the holiest day of the Hebrew calendar. It calls the Jewish people to atonement, to reconnect with what is holy, to check in with others in their lives, to check in with themselves, with their own bodies. The purpose of Yom Kippur is to remind each of us to exercise our emotional and spiritual muscles as well as our mental and physical ones. Once a year of going to that gym is probably not enough for most of us to strengthen our understanding of forgiveness until we realize that our lives can be forgiving. That is, that we can reclaim our inherent instinct to give of ourselves, to give of our attention, to give of our love, and to give of our hope. So join with me in this moment while I unpack some of my baggage and reflect on whether this may describe some feelings that are familiar for you. Forgive me for the times that I have failed to live out of the love and the strength that is within me. Forgive me for the times that I stopped giving of myself because of what someone long ago had stopped giving me. Forgive me for the times that I hurt you because I was caught up in the hurts I still carry inside. Forgive me for the moments that I withheld my affection, trying to protect myself from the rejection and misunderstanding I find so painful. Forgive me for the times that I've assumed too much control, trying to compensate from old fears of having not enough control. Forgive me for disappointing you by being so preoccupied with old feelings of being a disappointment. Forgive me for the times that I failed to have faith in the love that you carry and failed to see your need to give it. And forgive me for the times that I failed to see the love that I have to offer and offer the part of me that is forgiving. Two young boys, out of their own darkness and pain, killed Everett Worthington Jr.'s mother. Everett Worthington Jr. lost a great source of love, and he temporarily lost his composure, but he was not willing to lose his heart, to lose touch with the love that so often brought him to his knees and gave him a sense of awe, for the love and the faith that taught him to be resilient and generous with his heart, for the sun and the moon and the stars which keep shining through the darkness, and for the dancing and singing and music that plays over the sounds of sorrow, and for everything that reminds us that our lives are forgiving to the glory of life.